Thank you. Thank you, the organizers. So my talk will be based on two papers which are closely related. Even the archive gave them the last two digits, the same. So I need to check when maybe all papers on higher spins and flat space have the same two digits. I'll explain what I'm going to be talking about, but main motivations come somewhat not from trying to solve this perennial problem whether there could be massless high spins in flat space against all common sense and wisdom, but rather trying to understand in general properties of theories with infinite number of states, like string theory, etc. But in particular, we have a consistent higher spin theory in EDS, just for single tower of massless higher spins, which is related to vectorial CFT at the boundary, or we have what should be tensionless limit of string theory in EDS, which is related to adjoint free theory at the boundary, like adjoint scalar or adjoint Maxwell. So higher spin theory in EDS is quite complicated and in fact poorly understood. In some sense it should be simple because it's due to just a free theory at the boundary, but if you just look at it from the bulk point of view, it's not looking simple. So we don't know what's the action. We don't know in which sense it's local. It doesn't look like local. So one would try, one motivation is to think of flat space as possible limit of that theory. Naively, it doesn't exist, but maybe there is some non-trivial limit which gives you something which will look non-trivial. So that clearly goes against possible existence of flat space high spin theory, goes against no-go theorems, which were mentioned in last talk yesterday by Nima. But maybe one should keep an open mind and relax locality and see what one gets. So at the end, looks like we'll get back to trivial S matrix, but in principle, it's non-trivial question, as I'll try to explain. One could even say, well, if you have infinite number of fields, you get trivial S matrix after summing over them. Could it be that there is a theory with trivial S matrix, which is not just free fields, which may have some dynamics like? It may be topological in some sense, but maybe more than that. Of course, this is all just hand-waving, but, well, I'll be motivated by Hamlet. So we'll see. But again, this summary of what I'm going to talk about is construction. So we know cubic vertices for higher spins in flat space. We'd like to construct quartic interactions. And the way to do that in the most sort of economical way is to use this matrix-based approach, which we'll be using. And in particular, we'll be looking at amplitudes with three scales and one spin S. And it turns out that one could find quartic interactions which make these amplitudes gauge invariant, but only, which will be local only for spin two and four. So these quartic vertices will exist only for these two spins, which will be local. If you go beyond spin four, and we'll be discussing even spins. So spin six, for example, you need to add already non-local quartic interaction. Now, what looks like, it looks like as if we can restore from the structure of the answer, we'll see that we can restore locality by introducing an extra set of fields, which look like ghost-like fields, and there will be infinite number of them. And if it's true that this sort of conjecture is true, then we'll get a local action, and then which will be non-unitary. But again, it looks like that the resulting action may have trivial S matrix. So that will be in agreement with soft limit constraints on S matrix coming from gauge invariance and assumption of locality. If there is a local action, unitarity here is not really important. So then one could ask, okay, so this S matrix is trivial, maybe this is a consequence of some symmetry. And suggestion which we'll make is that maybe there is some kind of extension of this high spin theory in flat space which has extra conformal symmetry. And that will be more equivalent to what we have in Einstein theory. We can formally extended off-shell, as I'll explain, which will be, as a result, the theory becomes non-local. It still have the same S matrix, but looks non-local. But we'll have extra symmetry, which is kind of correlated with this non-locality. So that will be my plan. So I'll discuss the scattering amplitudes. I discuss constraints from S matrix, which follow from gauge invariance of S matrix, and then construction of which vertices we need to add to make these amplitudes gauge invariant, and then attempts to resolve this non-locality and then conformal extension. So let me just review what we know about massless high spins in flat space. It's an old subject. So essentially, there's a Fronzel action for double traceless rank S tensors. You need double tracelessness to have 2 degrees of freedom on shell, and you have standard gauge invariance with traceless parameters. And cubic interactions are known, quartic interactions are not known. Well, we're not really studied much. They look very complicated. So the question is, regardless of S matrix, whether there is consistent classical interacting theory is open. But indeed, from S matrix point of view, we have no-go theorems, various arguments with various assumptions. And so the key issue is locality. And that's what we would like to address, whether we can relax locality. So I already mentioned why this is of interest. This may be related to tensionless limit of string theory. Well, if you naively think of string theory in flat space, then tensionless limit is not well defined, but it is well defined in EDS, should be well defined in EDS. So then we could think of this theory. And also, in principle, in EDS, we know consistent nonlinear equations and which involve infinite number of auxiliary fields. It's not clear how to eliminate them. But studies, which recent studies, when people try to derive equations for Fronzel fields or result in action, looks like this, lots of issues with how you sum over auxiliary field issues of non-locality of resulting kernels, interaction vertices. So it's not actually clear what is the final formulation of the theory beyond these nonlinear formal equations. Now, one could reconstruct this action for Fronzel fields directly from CFT, from correlators at the boundary. And again, this approach, it gives full three-point functions, which were found recently. Quartic interactions look very complicated, again, having some kernel, which depends on all powers of derivatives. So again, locality in ADS is subtle and it's unclear whether there is a local action in the standard sense. It's a theory with infinite number of fields, infinite number of derivatives, so in the interaction, so that's what we have. And now, flat space limit, as I said, it's not clear whether it exists from ADS, so we'll not try to derive it from ADS, but we'll rather start with what is known about flat space. So there are lots of studies of starting from mid-80s. Suppose you start with this Fronzel action, what would be cubic interactions, which are gauge invariant? So you just consider free action plus cubic and insist on gauge invariance. And there are constraints on how these cubic interactions look like. So there is a covariant approach, which gives you essentially two types of couplings with many derivatives depending on three spins. Or light cone approach, where you can have more interaction vertices. And then, so cubic vertices are known, so then you can apply in principle Noether precision, deform gauge transformations, add four vertex, and try to construct nonlinear action. And that's very complicated and wasn't really done in a systematic way. So another piece of information, it's known what are coupling constants in the cubic interaction. And they must involve two couplings, so scale L and the coupling G. So in some sense, it's like in Einstein gravity, we have dimensionless coupling, dimensional coupling, which is like Newton constant. Or you can just think of analogy of string theory where you have dimensionless coupling plus a scale. So scale here is needed to make these interaction vertices dimensionless or having same dimensionless kinetic term. So number of derivatives grows with with spin and number of fields. So it's really, in that sense, it's effectively non-local already. So it's, but in some sense, like string theory, you have similar non-local vertices in the interactions. So to find quartic interaction, we need to impose gauge invariance. So to impose gauge invariance, we will use this matrix approach, but first let me prepare for the discussion of scattering amplitude. So just to introduce notation, which are natural to use here. So dealing with these symmetric traceless, double traceless tensors, it's useful to multiply them by constant vector u and consider these by field vector arguments x and u. And then Fronzel action, which is essentially phi box phi, describing two degrees of freedom, it becomes looking like strangely more complicated, but that's how it looks like in this bilinear notation. So it's phi with x, with this argument being derivative, then there's some operator like projector, and then there's kinetic operator, which is essentially having two derivatives, u rule Laplacian plus u contracted with derivatives. So that needed to project the right structure in the action, gauge invariant structure. So at the end, there is no u dependence. So all these derivatives eat powers of u. So it's all just x dependent action. So these are free equations. So this is a double traceless condition. So linearized gauge transformation look like this. So epsilon is again traceless parameter. And the standard Didonder of Feynman type gauge, which is basically like this, the action becomes having usual box equations with time up to this T, which is this projector, but just a differential operator in U. So cubic interactions, that's how they look like for the case which we'll be interested in. Namely, if we consider one scalar and two spin two, spin three, you will have, we will have S2 spin derivatives in X, S3 spin derivatives in X contracted with these derivatives over U, and here the product of scalar S2, S3 field. And again, the couplings are given by, we'll choose them in that particular form, which seems to be, it's kind of required in Lyapunov approach to have that sort of coupling, to have couplings to have closure of Poincaré algebra. So we just borrow that same coupling. Interestingly, exactly the same type of couplings come out of ADS approach, cubic vertices constructed from ADS CFT. So that seems to be kind of not completely surprising, because at the level of cubic coupling, certainly there should be correspondence between ADS higher spin theory and massless spin flat space spin theory. So that's how the propagator for high spins look in this Didonder gauge. Essentially, it's a 1 over p squared times the projector, which here is bilinear in use. And that projector essentially is what's called Chebyshev polynomial of first kind. It's a polynomial which is with that kind of generating functional, very simple. So that's the propagator in with this auxiliary dependence on u and u prime. And that's a cubic vertex in momentum space. And we can then consider just scattering of four scalars, for example, via exchange of all tau of high spin fields and see what we get. So that will be not total amplitude. We'll need to add quartic interaction term, contact term. But first discuss just exchange part. And that was done in various ways before, but also recently we reconsidered this with particular choice of couplings, which I mentioned. So S-channel exchange of spin J is essentially given by, it's very simple, it's given by that projector which I mentioned earlier, which translates into this Chebyshev polynomial ratio of kinematic variables. So all particles are massless here on the legs, so these are just standard Mandelson variables. So the couplings here are just some numbers, and the 1 over S is just exchange. What do we get if we sum over all intermediate spins? We get a function which is, so that's a result. This f is essentially Bessel functions. So that comes out of particular choice of these couplings and structure of having j spins, j derivatives in, j is here is a spin, in the interaction. So I should remind you that if you have two spin zeros and one spin s, there will be one s derivative in the interaction. So it's not minimal coupling, it's spin s coupling to scalars. Well, each spin s couples with s derivatives, which is not surprising, but essentially the point is that that gives you these Bessel functions just by very straightforward computation. So sum over exchanges is convergent, and full amplitude just given by sum over channels. And we can look at various limits, and what we'll see from these Bessel functions, there is exponential growth. If we take, say, T large, or we consider fixed angle scattering, we'll get exponential growth of the amplitude, and that suggests, of course, the usual problem in loops, which is just exactly opposite to usual string theory amplitude, which is soft in same limit. So essentially, exponent here has plus sign, here is minus. Here is square root of s, here is s. Now,
is there any similarity between this Bessel function and what shows up in this continuous spin work? There are people who talk about continuous spin, trying to make sense of theory of the continuous spin representations. And there, I thought that their propagators also had these Bessel functions.
Propagators maybe, but that's in the propagator you have this Chebyshev polynomial, but it does translate with a particular choice of couplings. It's kind of related to each other. Yes. Again, this is not a full amplitude. It's just exchange. So here I'm comparing with exact answer in exact full amplitude in string theory. So it's not fair. And in fact, what may happen is that this exchange contact term cancels that exponential growth. And there are indications that that may actually happen. So one indication is that we can try to guess what is the quartic vertex before we actually get to some more detailed discussion of how it can look like. We can try just to guess it from what is known in ADS. So again, there is an ADS action, reconstruct from ADS CFT, and there is some information about four scalar vertex, which was not very explicit, but if you just translate it formally to flat space, replacing covariant derivatives by ordinary derivatives, it gives basically something like this. So it's a sum over, it's effectively non-local, having some kernel depending on derivatives, four scalars, derivatives, and this kernel, if we just look at its large Z asymptotics, it's essentially large momentum asymptotics, it goes like this, and if we just evaluate what that asymptotics give us, we get again some Bessel function. So essentially very similar to what we have in exchange. So that suggests maybe this non-local contact vertex, which comes out of this ADS consideration, may actually cancel against the exchange. So at the end, we may get something trivial or zero, or certainly not having non-trivial pole structure. Well, I'll skip remarks. So if one believes in some relation between S matrix and ADS and S matrix and flat space, that may seem natural to expect that the resulting S matrix would be kind of simple. And here are some comments of BCFW. I'll skip them because I'll rather not get into analysis of what kind of assumptions, etc., but just show what we get if we just follow the simple. If we don't make any assumptions a priori, just use gauge invariance and nothing more than that. So to construct these quartic interactions, it's natural to use this matrix approach, which is kind of more economical than usual Noether procedure, where we need to deform gauge transformations at the same time as deforming the action. And it's kind of iterative procedure, which is kind of very complicated if we use it in this present context. So a more efficient approach is start with this matrix, demand on-shell gauge invariance. Then we need to know only linearized gauge transformations. Essentially, terms linearized means with derivative terms. Terms involving fields, they relate Green's function to Green's functions, and essentially they're projected out once we get to this matrix element. So all we need to know is just linearized gauge transformations. And then we look at, if we consider non-trivial case when cubic interaction is not manifestly invariant under linearized gauge transformations, but rather it's cancelled against variation of the kinetic term, so that means it's a variant up to equations of motion, then plugging the three-point function into high point amplitude, we'll get variation which is proportional to p squared, and it will be cancelling one over p squared pole, so we can cancel that change by adding high point vertex. So then we can fix that high point vertex from that consideration. So simplest example is scalar electrodynamics. Suppose we have, we know this action is manifestly gauge invariant under these transformations, but suppose we look at scattering amplitude, just exchange looks like this. So two scalars, two vectors, and then we do gauge transformation on one vector leg, and we see that this expression exchange, it's not invariant, but it's invariant by something which we can cancel by adding constant, by adding usual contact term and making variation on one leg. So that's essentially the logic. So we start with exchange, do gauge transformation, and see what we can, how we can cancel it against adding a contact interaction. So what we'll do, we'll consider a scattering of three scalars and one spin S, compute this exchange amplitude, then try to find quartic interaction which cancels its variation. And we'll parameterize this quartic vertex in general as three scalars and one spin S field. So here it's S, with some coefficient functions which depend on free momentum. And we need to constrain these coefficients from the condition of gauge invariance. So let me quickly review the usual story about constraint, gauge invariance constraints on this matrix. That's an old story going back to 50s and 60s, and even recently there was some discussion of what are the constraints from considering soft limit and corrections which come from gauge invariance. So essentially, if we assume locality, then we insist that all poles in amplitude should come only from on-shell propagators of particles already present in the action. So there can't be anything else. So then we just analyze the gauge invariance in the soft momentum expansion, and that way we can get these constraints also for higher spin, for higher spins. So simplest example is the scattering of many scalars and one spin S particle, and for spin S particle we have momentum which is Q, and we take it to zero and see what we get. So we have two contributions. One will be with having pole and not having pole. So without, with the one with pole in Q, it will be P, and regular part is R. And this pole part, essentially, it has propagated P, one will be PI plus Q. So you take Q small, so you have just left with this singular part. And W here stands for this blob which has, which becomes essentially on-shell amplitude once we take Q to zero, once this leg becomes on-shell. So that's important because then we have, can use gauge invariance constraints on that amplitude, on-shell amplitude in that limit, and that leads to constraints on the amplitude which remains and momentum. So essentially, gauge invariance constraints on this W, which is this amplitude with n legs, translates after we impose gauge invariance of the full amplitude with S, with spin S leg. It translates to that famous condition, which essentially here means that either you have this n scale amplitude being zero, or this polynomial in momenta should be zero. And that condition can be satisfied in general unless spins are less than two, less or equal than two, where we can use momentum conservation. So we're left with this condition that the amplitude of n scalars should be zero. So that is human locality, and that means the S matrix is trivial. Either if you assume there is such gauge invariant interaction, gauge invariant amplitude coming from local action, that should be implying vanishing of the amplitude.
For spin, assumption there that you're talking about the minimal coupling?
Or the no. There's no assumption of minimal coupling here.
Well, then the statement's false.
Okay. Well.
Because we can always couple things with linearized field strength.
I'm okay. So that's what I mentioned. I'm assuming there's no. I'm assuming non-trivial cubic couplings, where there are no Well, the gauge invariance is against the kinetic term, not manifestly invariant. And that these examples of cubic couplings which I mentioned are of that type. Now, same argument can be repeated for considering several spin n spin s with one spin s. So just instead of scalars, we can consider general amplitude. Then we'll have some generic cubic interactions, and not cubic, generic polynomial in momenta and this auxiliary derivative U. So here there are three couplings. So I'm again referring to that picture. So there is a three-point coupling here. So this V refers to that coupling. So if we know these three-point functions which are gauge invariant, so we use that information to constrain again the resulting amplitude. So let me just skip the details. So essentially, the logic is the same. We just impose gauge invariance on S, a spin S lag. And what we learn is that from gauge invariance constraints, we get some condition of vanishing of the resulting amplitude with spin with S, essentially that part, with only n spins, which constrains the couplings, three-point couplings in this left-hand side cubic interaction. So what's the constraint? For spin s, if the lag, the distinguished lag is spin 2, the couplings should be the same for all other spins. So essentially, for that case, we can use momentum conservation that constrains the couplings. So that essentially means that spin 2 should be coupled universally. Now, if spin is bigger than 2, then we cannot have vanishing of this bilinear, of this polynomial in momenta with couplings. And then the amplitude should be vanishing. Or there is a constraint on couplings. So there either one or the other. Constraint on coupling such that there's no coupling of spin S to all lower spins. So for example, spin 2 cannot couple to spin 1, spin 2, which is kind of unphysical. So essentially it means no cubic diagonal couplings of lower spins to spin S. So now the previous example is just a special case of that, where, because we know here there is a coupling between spin S and spin 0. Two spin zeros, it's just constructed, it's known. So then locality implies, if you assume locality, then amplitude should vanish. So for n equal 3, this is trivial. This coupling is trivially absent. There's no three spin zero coupling. For n equal 4, the vanishing of this amplitude will come from insisting on gauge invariance of five-point amplitude, like this. Again, assuming there's locality of 5x. So this is beyond what we're going to discuss. But that just follows from the general consideration. So now comes the point. So suppose we relax locality and just try to impose gauge invariance and see what we get. If at the end, as what I'll try to conjecture, we can recover locality by adding extra fields and relaxing unitarity, then the result should still be trivial. So these gauge invariance considerations should imply that total amplitude should be still zero. We can't avoid these conclusions because there's very little came into that assumption. Now, so just getting to the details. So what we do explicitly, we just consider instead of four spin zero scalars, we consider three spin zeros and spin s explicitly, compute exchange amplitude. And it has essentially the same structure as in the case of four spin zeros. The only difference is now we have this polarization tensor, which is in this symbolic form, which is indices are contracted with momenta, with this third momenta, S powers of third momenta. And this, again, this Chebyshev polynomial here, and exchange is expressed at the end, after summing, over spins, over all intermediate spins, in terms of function F, which will now be not Bessel of zero, but Bessel of S. So it's very similar, just Bessel function of argument S. So then we go through that same procedure, doing gauge transformation and looking at whether we can cancel the variation of this exchange amplitude, which will be containing these Bessel functions. Pole goes away, as I explained. Instead, we get parameter of the gauge transformations, whether we can cancel that against some quartic interaction, which we can add with some coefficient functions. And this coefficient function will turn out to be non-local in general. So, but our aim is to fix them. So that's what we did. For spin 2, we found that this local vertex actually, there exists a local vertex, and that's how it looks like, again, expressed in terms of Bessels and residues of this F function. So it's some momentum Bessels of arguments of this kinematic variable. And then one can actually look at particular amplitude, which has very simple structure, but it's a particular, it's an amplitude up to extra local four vertex, which we can add, which will not change the gauge invariance of this expression. So it's not final answer, but to fix the true answer, one needs to consider whole set of amplitudes with high number of legs. So this is just one particular minimal choice of the what could be the amplitude. Now for spin 4, similar story goes. There is again a candidate sort of contact interaction which is local, which gives gauge invariant amplitude, but that fails for spins bigger than 4. And that in that case we must have non-local 4 vertex in agreement with these general considerations. Strictly speaking, these general considerations will need to be run for 5-point amplitude to constrain these amplitudes, 0, 0, 0s. And similar constraints come from also from assumption from BCF double constructability if you assume, make assumptions which are made in that construction. And in fact, there were several papers suggesting also one should relax some of the assumptions, essentially introducing some kind of non-locality if one wants to get something non-trivial. So what explicit, what kind of terms we're actually getting if we insist on gauge invariance and introduce some minimal non-local terms which are needed to make amplitude gauge invariant. So that's how they look like. It's essentially non-local terms containing one over box ascent. One over P1, P2 is just a contraction of two momentum. Times some polynomials in momentum. So that's explicit for spin 6, 8, 10. That's how these expressions look like. And written in terms of X space, it really looks like some exchange. So it's a contact vertex again. What I need to add to exchange, proper exchange of all spins to make it gauge invariant. So it contains one of a box. And it's interesting that this expression with particular coefficients which enter, it actually it allows one to factorize it, essentially writing it in a form which does look like exchange of some auxiliary fields. So if we introduce the auxiliary field psi s, they need to be ghost-like, so they must have wrong kinetic sign, but then action becomes local. We integrate them, we get back to this quartic interaction, which we need to for gauge invariance. But once we make assumption that such tower of auxiliary fields exist, then they also imply extra contribution to other amplitudes. For example, we get extra contribution to 0-4 scalar vertex and 2 scalars, 2 spins. So what this, why this is significant, because that actually leads to cancellation of that exchange part, which I mentioned earlier, against this extra contribution of this extra auxiliary fields, which you need to introduce to make things local. So it looks like the four-scale amplitude, which I discussed earlier, gets extra contribution, which cancels against the pole part in exchange. So the bottom line is that we can, the conjecture is that maybe all these non-local terms which we introduced to make the amplitude gauge invariant can be made into local action by introducing extra fields, but then its matrix may at the end be trivial. And that will be in agreement with this consideration based on soft theorems that if you have local action, you must have trivial scattering. And the assumption of what are three-point functions, et cetera, which we actually know explicitly. So then one could ask what could be the sort of reason for that triviality of this matrix. Maybe there is some symmetry reason. Why? We know now example, which I actually talked here 2 weeks ago, in the non-unitary theory of conformal high spins, which is a theory with high derivatives, but with much simpler structure, which has, which essentially generalization of wild gravity to all spins. It has the same symmetry as free Laplacian or massless high spins in ADS. In that theory, the S-matrix appears to be trivial, at least S-matrix for physical massless particles. So that reason for triviality could be a symmetry. So here, in this massless high-spin theory, there is no obvious candidate for a symmetry, but one may make a bold conjecture. Maybe there is a formulation of that theory which actually has conformal symmetry. And that's what I'm going to quickly mention now. An analogy is with Einstein theory. So in Einstein theory, what we know is that we can have we can introduce an extra, well, phi squared is missing here, an extra auxiliary field, phi, and make this Einstein theory into wild invariant theory. And this phi, of course, is ghost-like, and it's just pure gauge degrees of freedom, degree of freedom. But when one could solve for this phi and get some effective action for gravitons, which will look non-local, still have the same S matrix, but this non-local action has an extra symmetry. So if the same idea works for massless high spins, that may be a way to get this extra symmetry, which may be a reason for triviality of this matrix. So that's kind of a vague idea. But let me, it may be of interest to think of, it's not very well known how that actually works in the case of Einstein theory, so let me review this quickly, if I have 2 minutes left, yeah, three. So let's first forget about this wild conformal extension. Just look at Einstein theory. It depends, just has very well-known simple facts. It depends on both traceless part of graviton and trace. So I'll call traceless part team MN and trace H. And H is unphysical. It can be gauged away on shell. It's really, it's not a symbiotic state in this matrix. So why don't we just integrate it out? Just expand this action in your flat space and integrate the trace out. So if we do that, we get non-local action. Before we make any assumptions or anything, we just integrate the trace, we get non-local action for traceless part. And to compare to wild gravity, here you'll have four derivatives, but you'll have local action for that same traceless part, because here you have gauge symmetry, wild symmetry, which allows you to gauge fix the trace. Now, the closed form for that action can actually be written in this way, where one of the box here is conformal Laplacian. It looks non-local, but essentially it's equivalent to, it will reproduce the same as matrix in Einstein theory. So the idea is to generalize that to high spins. So essentially integrating out traces of this field phi, Fronzel field, which is subject to double traceness condition, which is weaker. So there are traces, we can integrate them and get some non-local action. So so let me, before I actually get to that, again, make quickly remind you how this looks like in Einstein theory. So this is just expansion in terms of traceless and trace. Integrating trace, we get something looking non-local. And for the traceless part, and essentially it boils down to the non-local vertex at the quartic level if we just fix the transverse gauge to simplify things. That's a non-local contribution which comes from integrating out the trace. You may say that shouldn't be physical. The trace is unphysical, has wrong kinetic sign in kinetic term. So that came essentially from that exchange. So it traces pure gauge on shell. So essentially, three-point function is the same. And if you use BCFW, for example, you will ignore this term. And that is true, but that is based on assumption, what are the polarization vectors? Essentially, what special choice of on-shell gauge which goes into that construction. But if we don't make this choice, so this part by itself is not gauge invariant. So it's only the total is gauge invariant. And the meaning of this term is to cancel other non-physical parts of the graviton exchange, like time-like and longitudinal. That's what trace is also canceling. So So the idea is to generalize this to, how to get this full action in a systematic way is to start with that action, expand near flat space. You need to assume phi has vacuum expectation one, otherwise you get inequivalent theory. And then having wild symmetry allows you to essentially solve for this phi explicitly. You have this non-local action, and it was still having the same S matrix. And the point is that that action is equivalent to integrating trace in the Einstein action. It just summarizes the result to all orders. So this wild symmetry allows you to fix either tracelessness on HMN, or gauge away this this scalar. So if same works for massless high spins, we will end up essentially with a theory which has extra conformal symmetry. So just at linearized level, basically, instead of conformal high spin theory, which has an action which is square of linearized wild tensor like this, you'll have a non-local action, non-locally looking action in terms of wild tensor, but essentially it's just box action. But higher interaction will be non-local, looking non-local. But this matrix will be the same, cubic interaction will be the same. So reason for this extra, this extra symmetry is interesting is because it will be implying, hopefully, that this matrix is trivial. So these are conclusions, essentially summary of what I said. So it looks like we're going in somewhat in circles, but hopefully we learned something useful. And essentially, one point is to learn more about assumptions which go into various claims. So here, there is some non-trivial structure which is coming from these three-point functions. Now, what we make of this is unclear. There are various assumptions, like single tower of higher spins, for example, one assumption. But we would try to relax locality, and story is not completely clear, but there are indications that once we relax locality, we do get non-trivial theory. But that non-trivial theory may be local in disguise if we relax unitarity, but then we're back to trivialist matrix. So far it's an open question. What is the main lesson of all that? Thank you.
Question.
So first a quick comment and then a question related to it. So In what you were referring to with the Benincasa Cachazzo stuff with BCFW constructibility, there's a very closely related thing that you can study that makes no assumptions about constructibility or BCFW or anything. It's just it's the most basic direct check, which is easy to do at 4 points, to just see if it's possible to build a 4-point object that factorizes properly, with no assumptions about behavior, infinity, BCFW.
Okay.
So those were the things I was reviewing in my talk yesterday, mm-hmm. for example. And of course, the conclusions for the theories that we care about are the same. The theories we care about are BCFW constructible, but you can phrase it without making that assumption. I think that's the cleanest sort of amplitude level check of the presence of these things. And indeed, one discovers that if you try to make things that factorize properly, in other words, assuming one over p squared in the one over s's, one over stu for the poles, then the usual conclusions follow. So one thing that I was wondering is when you said you're relaxing locality, it was a kind of a Lagrangian level statement that you see one over boxes in the 3-point function, for example. But what does the actual 4-point amplitude look like? Does it still have poles like one over p squared, or you get one over p to the fourths in them?
Okay, so let me repeat what we actually did. So we have exchange where we have poles. Now, it's not gauge invariant by itself. So to restore gauge invariance, we need to add contribution of a contact term, what we call contact term. But this contact term must be having this one over box pole to make the whole thing
gauge
invariant. Now, we do not have proof of, once we add it together, all poles go away and we just get contact. We don't have proof of that.
Oh, you don't have proof of that. Oh, I see.
Right. Yes, so.
But
there were examples which I mentioned where for lower spins, like 2 and 4, there is a closed expression for what could be an amplitude, which is yes. gauge invariant by itself. It doesn't mean that you cannot add something gauge invariant,
sure.
which is quartic.
But I'm curious, the thing that you have, does it have normal poles or does it have double poles? Is it normal?
It just has normal poles.
Normal poles.
Yes.
And,
but again, what I was trying to say that on the assumption we can resolve this non-locality, we tend to think we end up with trivialist matrix, which is in agreement with this general argument.
I mean, something that one could wonder is another way you could imagine that you could have a non-trivialist matrix maybe, but relaxing locality, is to go back to these four-point factorization exercises and allow double poles, say, and then just ask. That's an algebraic question that's different than the one that's been solved to see if it's possible to have consistently factorizing things with double poles. But anyway, that's not what you're. Instead, you're getting zero somehow. But when things make sense.
Yeah, I think it's an important question if we go beyond these four-point templates which we discussed. Because I think for double poles you need to go.
And I had one more question I should have asked at the very beginning of the talk. What's the rule that I mean, you have the very specific coefficients for all the different three-particle amplitudes, right? So,
where did it come from?
Yeah, where does that come from?
That's a very good question. In covariant approach, if you just assume Lorentz covariance, to get these couplings, you will need really to do this Noether procedure, or you need to constrain the quartic. In light cone approach, so light cone approach means you just start, like in string field theory, or you can just start in light cone frame and insist on closing Poincaré algebra at the level of Lagrangian. So you're not assuming Lorentz from the beginning, but you add cubic quartic interaction. So that was done actually by Mitsaev, and from that considerations, from these considerations, couplings are fixed. And that's what we're using. So somehow we're assuming this theory will have consistent gauge invariance, then presumably it has light cone formulation, and then these couplings should be the same. But surprisingly, the same couplings come from EDS. And they come essentially from three-point function at the boundary, from CFT.
I'm wondering, purely from the amplitude, you never talked about gauge invariance for the Lagrangian, purely from the amplitude. I'm wondering, I presume those couplings being exactly what they are,
I think some of these considerations do not really sensitive to couplings. Whether they're zero or non-zero, that's important. Particular Bessel function, etc., are very sensitive to that particular choice of couplings. But I think couplings at that level is not crucial part of the story.
Questions? No, if there are no more questions, let's thank them. I'll carry on.